Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And also a fabulous service department that backs it all up every step of the way, from the routine to the difficult. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ladies and gentlemen, time once again for another edition of Tuesdays with Neil. Welcome, sir.
As always, Tuesday or any day, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so this is one of those lull periods right now for the NFL. We've talked about the schedule. We've talked about the draft. So it gives everybody a chance to settle to see what the landscape is. So let's start with the Steelers. What is the landscape of the Steelers as we head into Memorial Day weekend?
I think, generally speaking, they have to be pretty happy with what they've been able to put together to this point. And it's been a very specific and very targeted approach this offseason. And most recently, they locked up backup quarterback for them on a deal that I haven't seen terms of this yet, but by and large, it's a market deal. And you have him, from what I've gathered to this point, for the next three seasons. That's probably a good move with a young quarterback that has some injury history. It's a good idea to get the veteran in there that's played in this offense. I understand they also signed Mason Rudolph, but Rudolph hasn't really played in this offense.
Right.
That was not the offense. The last time Rudolph played, it was not the offense they're playing in now. It's not the same thing. Trubisky has the experience with the structure that they're currently running in. Granted, not a ton, but I think we saw enough in his final performance to say, okay, this situation's probably a better fit for him. He is also probably not going to get a starting opportunity elsewhere, having to start over.
Mm-hmm.
This is his career path, and it's a very lucrative career path. So a smart move, and I would put that intellectually at the same level as Isaac Ciamolo, the guard they signed out of Philadelphia, which is probably their best move this offseason. Not comparing talent or skill or contributory factor, but just philosophically, they fit what this team is building itself to do. And they're both strategic moves, spending wise money the right way on players for a very specific purpose. That seems to be really kind of the theme to this point. And I think they've hit very well. I'm not really confused with any of the moves that they're making. I would say, if anything, some shakeup in the secondary, considering the players they're bringing in, kind of suggests schematic change there. They haven't publicly said that yet, but I don't know what else you are intending to do when you bring in Joey Porter Jr. With Trice as well. These are two press cornerbacks with size, with length. They're looking to play that style of football within their coverage. We'll see how formally that works out. But when you cut a Kelly Witherspoon after getting a look at the rookies that you just brought in, I would say odds are pretty good that they're looking to implement that different technique from what they've run pretty much since Mel Blount retired. That's a good strategic move for a team that relies heavily on a pass rush. Do something with your secondary to be more aggressive in trying to take away quick game opportunities, which they've gotten gashed on several times over the last couple of years. To do something like that shows they have a solid plan, there's solid reasoning behind it, and they're bringing in the personnel to fit that. I think it's a win on offense for what they did along their offensive line. I think it's a win on defense of what they're doing within their secondary. And these were fairly significant problems, really, over the last, three seasons to this team, if not longer. Some would argue forever. This is the right direction for them to go. And they're really putting the team in the best position to succeed possible. Now, does that mean 13 wins? I don't know if they're that talented. I do like what they're doing schematically. I do like what they're choosing to do in terms of personnel. I feel like this can come together pretty well, and at the very least, they'll be a very tough team to beat. Are they going to be somebody that's going to, you know, just burn somebody for 30 points every single game? I don't know. I don't know if they're that talented, but they're going to be a difficult team to prepare for, and they're going to be a difficult team to beat. And I think that's a good spot to be considering where they have been. They've had to pull off miracles in the second half of the last couple seasons. They should be more competitive right away, and I think that can get them to the double-digit win mark this season. And from there, who knows? I mean, we've seen a lot of upsets in the NFL. Teams are coming on later and playing better football down the stretch. That's really kind of their MO, and I think they can buy a little bit more breathing room this year, unlike the last two seasons where they've had to go gangbusters over the last, six, seven, eight games in order to be in a position to either make the playoffs in overtime at the end of the last game played that season, or just miss the playoffs in week 18 as well. So it's solid moves, good direction. I don't know. It's in get into the draft. It's a great draft for what they're trying to do as well. The dividends that they're looking to pay on that, will they get a whole lot back right away from their draft class? Always remains to be seen. We don't know. We love it on paper. Let's see what happens when they get pads on and get out there. But really nothing to not like about the guys that they're bringing in. And I think that should fill them with a good amount of optimism. The team that's on the rise played really well at the end of last year with the rookie quarterback. They got a lot out of him down the stretch. I every reason that we've seen to this point suggests they're going to be a better team this year.
What does, now that we're getting a real feel for what Omar Khan and his front office staff can do, because they're shaping this roster, what's your evaluation of them now that you're starting to see it in practical application?
I think that's kind of a two-part, because I say this because everyone wants to credit Khan with everything.
Oh no! Yeah, it right. It's more. That's fairly, why I mentioned the staff.
Yeah. To address it specifically, most people are saying now all these things are happening now that Kevin Colbert's out of the way. One, I'm not even entirely sure he's 100% out of the way. Two, Colbert's front office, in my opinion, probably does all of these things. Somebody comes up to you and says, we'll take Chase Claypool and we'll give you a second round pick out of it. We've got a tenuous at best quarterback position in the first year of a new head coach, a second round pick for a team that is sitting seventh in the second round when they make the trade is a no brainer. The fact that turned into in a year that there's one less first round pick, that's a boon. That's not specific to the general manager, because frankly, I don't think any general manager, with the exception of Ryan Poles and the Bears, would not have made that move
right
from the Steelers end of it. And it worked out very well. They've made, I think these are kind of no brainers. Does Andy Weidel have stay over Siamalu's decision to sign with the Steelers, or does Siamalu see a chance to be a starting player, getting paid a lot of money, playing in an offense that suits his talents very well? He's an RPO guy. They've played in that. Very disciplined. He knows what to do. He brings that veteran savvy. That's a really, from his perspective, that's a move that's like, they really need you. You're going to be a high-value guy on this team. I don't necessarily think that's the front office so much as this is really a no-brainer for both sides. It's a great move. I'm not trying to denigrate anybody or take credit away from anybody for it. I think they've done an excellent job. I'm just saying that I think a lot of these moves are pretty in line with the Steelers' MO when the opportunities are there. We've known that they've been restructuring their offense. They want to run RPOs consistently. In fact, I believe they ran more RPOs than any team in the NFL over the last two seasons. That's going to continue. You can see what they're trying to do. They're getting the personnel to do that. They got a bully of a left tackle, which, to be fair, Kevin Colbert rarely ever traded up in the first round, and he never drafted an offensive tackle in the first round. So give Khan credit to where it's due, but I also think that that's kind of a no-brainer move for who Broderick Jones is and what they needed. That move, I think, is fairly routine. Most general managers would think to make that move themselves. But it's another piece to the larger picture that they're putting together. Jones fits in with an RPO mentality as well. They want to run the ball. They want to play quick game themselves. They want to get the ball to playmakers in space. And a guy like Jones might not be the best, drop step, pass protecting left tackle in the league, but he's going to be a bully on day one. Mm-hmm. You get him out in space, get the timing down. He releases when he's supposed to release. He's crushing people. You see it all the time on his film. If he does anything, it's that. The guy is an amazing athlete, a great fit for what they're trying to do. Makes perfect sense. I'd give them nothing short of an A. I mean, they made all the moves that they really needed to make, and they added a little bit as well. You've heard me praise Darnell Washington. I don't think tight end was a position that they expected to address in the draft, but the value of him in the third round is ridiculous, in my opinion. There's no way, unless he's going to play 3 years due to the injuries that he has. Even then, if you can make hay out of that guy for 3 years, I think you're going to get a lot out of it. That makes their sub package offensive play a lot more versatile. Gives them a lot more depth. There's a lot of things that they can do with a great all around tight end like Washington is, and a guy that at his core is physical. He's a tough guy to get around. He's a tough guy to cover down the field. That's a great move. It wasn't a position of need if you look at things, but they drafted their positions of need, in my opinion. They got rid of what they needed too early with three great picks for where they were taken. To add that kind of a piece for the fourth guy you took in the draft, that's, front office A for me, offseason as in free agency A for the draft as well. You put all that together, they I don't think they missed on a move. I don't say that often. Mm-hmm. I feel good about everybody that they took where they took them.
Agreed, across the board. This is also, we talked about the schedule and across the board what they do with the schedule. The NFL dominates every day, it seems, and they dominate every day in the fall and into the wintertime as well. Is there any thought on your part, Neil, that at some point they're overplaying the hand, or is it they're just that good and they know it?
I think they are that good, or not. They are overplaying their hand at the same time. I think there comes a point that your end game is not going to be to have professional football with the NFL brand on it every night, every week, throughout the entire year. So when do you pull the reins in? When do you say leaving them wanting more is a sound business strategy over a long period of time? Now, every commissioner and every owner that's been there has been a part of some type of expansion within the NFL. That's the sign of a healthy, strong business, which the NFL is. It's a product that people still want. It's a new generation. They've adapted very well to the end of the Manning versus Brady era and the fantasy football, explosion. And they've capitalized on that to use the best of what they have, along with the new talent that's coming in, to kind of, in a way, redesign their product a bit. They've changed the rules up a bunch. People are still watching, still engaged. People are still complaining. These are all things that, believe it or not, are healthy signs of business. People care a lot about the product. So I don't know, in my opinion, if I was in the boardroom, I would say, do we really need to mess with the schedule more. We want that 18th game. Logically, I would agree. I think an even number balances things out a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, they've done that, so there's historical precedent. It's a negotiating point with the union, which can, whether they get an 18th game or not, they're going to get or be able to avoid something significant from the union. There's value in that, so we'll keep pressing the idea that that's what we want. But as far as the days of the week go, I don't think it's a good idea to really go into more. I think part of the real value of the NFL is that locked in structure. You know, you talk to fans about why the NHL or the NBA doesn't really interest them. And it invariably the conversation comes around to not just the amount of games, but the sporadic nature of them. They're sort of spread out. It's hard to get into a flow and a rhythm. With football, you have it. You know, this can become kind of a center point of your week. You're going to watch your team play on Sunday or Monday or Thursday, but you add in Friday, you add in Saturday. Now it just kind of gets all over the place. And it, you know, in a way, this might not be the best way to express it, but in a way it sobers you up a little bit. It kind of makes you see the whole picture of it. Players are openly complaining about playing on different days and not being able to have that routine themselves. To me, I really, you know, I'm kind of a purist in this way. I think Sunday games with a Sunday night spotlight and a Monday night spotlight makes the most sense for everybody. I think it draws in the most national interest. It's not the most profitable. It's not the easiest way to drum up new broadcast opportunities. And I get that, but at some point you kind of have to say, we don't want to oversaturate. There are so many things that do that, and they'll ride her till she kicks them off and end up probably getting less in the long run than they could have if they just kind of stuck with what they had. Money is still being generated. You know, people are still watching this. You're going to continue to grow, and you have. I don't think that you need a team in London. I don't think that you need games on Tuesday nights.
Nope.
I think that you have what you need in front of you, and your job now is to maintain it. Don't worry about more exposure elsewhere. Let the product speak for itself. Don't try to mess with it too much. That's just me. That's not the pure black and white bottom line business perspective. But I think I have a certain level of insight to this that represents both sides. This might be the best way to go about it, is all I'm saying.
Right. I've got just 2 minutes here, but you work with a lot of young people on your staff at SI.com. When you talk to them, do the vast majority of them stream, or do they still go with linear options?
Oh, they stream. They stream. It's the ability to stream for what we do that mirrors the fans in a lot of ways, and we probably should be alongside of that. In the second screen experience world, you need to be able to see everything that's going on. So in many cases, usually what it is, whether it's laptop, your phone and TV, but they're watching a game and they have Red Zone channel on. And along with that, they're viewing social media in some way. I think that's sort of the way people are going to consume the NFL product moving forward. And that's a good thing. I think it spreads out a lot more. I'm from the era where you got your local team's games and that was it. It was the coolest thing in the world when we found a Steelers bar in St. Paul when I was like 14 years old, because then we could watch every Steelers game. We didn't get to do that. The streaming option gives you that plus everything else that's going on. And there are a lot more reasons today than there were 20 years ago to be invested in every single game. You have fantasy / gambling, whether that's one component or two, you have a lot of other interests, beyond just your team. And I think as media professionals, you need to monitor that and you need to know what's going on everywhere else. But my opinion is it's because that's how fans are consuming it now. So lining yourself up with that is a good idea professionally.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, lining it up like that is the smart move. I think the NFL's been smart because they dabbled with Amazon Prime. Now they've lost about 40% of their audience doing it. But it's also the beginning spot as well. Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the beginning. I mean, that's all it is. And I think it gives them an idea whether it works or not.
You got to test it out. You have to see it. You can't not do it. I mean, streaming isn't the future. Streaming is today. Yeah. So you need to figure out where the challenges are and what you need to do to incorporate that into your brand.
Sir, always a pleasure.
Definitely. Always a pleasure on my end as well. Thanks for having me.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. More in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a great service department that backs it all up every step of the way from the routine to the difficult. They can handle it because they have great technicians. It is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So far in today's show, we've talked about minor league baseball. We've talked about the NFL, but something that's always important, especially here in the Valley, high schools. And we're going to revisit with our old friend Bob Lombardi from the PIAA. Bob, great to have you with us. One of the great guys out there.
Good, Steve. How about you?
Doing great. How's the golf game, by the way?
When I'm with Ken Miller, it's really good, but you can't play with Ken Miller. He's in another world.
Well, Kenny's just... In fact, I saw Kenny 10 days ago. We were talking about you. He loves your game, by the way. So I'm the same way. I'll get out there with Greg Nye, the golf coach, and Greg will say, well, try this and try this. And like, when the round's over, I feel a lot better. But the next time I go out and I don't have them. It kills me. Name, image, and likeness. And the PIAA have had to navigate a lot of different issues over the years. What's been the biggest challenge with this, especially based on Pennsylvania law?
Well, our law right now speaks only to collegiate athletes. So that has helped, and it's also been maybe a potential problem. But we want to get in front of it, because there's a lot of trickle-down effect, and we've been watching very closely our brother and sister state associations. And right now, I believe there's 12 of them that have adopted an NIL policy, and there's another 10 on the drawing board. So the tough part about this, Steve, is the misinformation. Some people like to use catchphrases, and this has been thrown out there as pay for play, which it's not. And that has really caused some issues for us here.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about is pay for play. And every state has different has a different law or the interpretation. Quinn Ewers, who is now at the University of Texas, has always been really the poster child of what I'm about to talk about, because he was, as a high schooler, he would not be allowed to get any name, image, and likeness deals in Texas. So he reclassified and went to Ohio State for 4 months, 5 months, and then finally transferred to Texas as a collegian. How often do you and state associations talk to each other about what the respective laws are in each state to get a better gauge?
Well, we're fortunate. There's eight states in our section. We're Section 2 of the NFHS out of the 51 state associations. And our brother and sisters are Delaware, D.C., Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, and ourselves in Maryland. And right now, they're all talking about them. Our friends to New Jersey have a policy. Our friends to the north in New York has a policy. Ohio defeated theirs, but the reason they defeated theirs, from the information we have, is because they put the onus on the school. Some schools thought they had to approve this, and nobody wants to get involved in that. So our section talks weekly, and we have shared with them where we are with this. And it is really the middle-of-the-road type language, Steve. And the other part of it is we wanted to get in front of it, because we don't want to see a student that's a senior get caught in the net, so to speak, that people are out there fishing for sharks and they catch dolphins. That's not a good thing. So we want to work with the group and provide education to moms and dads to know what they can be doing and what they can't. And paying students to play is not one of them.
Right. Is there any talk, Bob, in the Pennsylvania legislative system of expanding this so that high schoolers could be a part of a name, image, and likeness and not be pay for play, but expanding the definition of what they have in the state?
I'm not aware of that, Steve, at this time. I'm sure there's conversation, but I think with that, with the eye on that a little bit, we would like to develop our own language that our member schools would like, that they're comfortable with, instead of having a top-down approach that you have to accept what is given to you.
How would you feel about federal legislation where there would be a sense of unified law?
Well, you know what? If everybody's singing from that same hymnal, I think that would be all right. But the NCAA has walked away from that and sort of dumped, you know, you talk to Dan over there in the football ops office, or Matt in the Pitt football ops office, they're going to tell you at the collegiate level it's like the Wild Wild West. Well, heck, we don't want that to happen. We want to get in front of this and provide a proactive approach to mom and dad and guardians and families so they can make educated decisions and not get caught up in something as simple as tax implications or financial implications that students at 18 years of age aren't ready for.
Exactly. Believe me, there are adults of 28 years of age aren't ready for it either.
we could go higher than that, brother.
You're right. We could go higher in a number than that in terms of the age. No question. So if you had a chance, based on talking to other associations, to craft an idea and send the PIAA in a direction, what direction?
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second.
If you've talked to enough associations within the states, what direction do you idealistically, if you had a chance to sit down with the legislature, and you've had your chances, obviously, but to talk about this issue, what would be a couple of ideas that they would need to consider legislatively that could make a difference?
Well, I think the language that we've come up with to not have school-employed or affiliated people with booster clubs or coaches, administrators, alumni, they cannot solicit, arrange, or negotiate or pay for a student's use of their NIL or even give consideration to the student for a use of their NIL and not use school name, nickname, uniform, any school-identifying apparel or involved with PIAA or their member school in it. That would be a really good start. And that's the language we have that we've sort of taken from California, New Jersey, and New York. It's real simple. It's the middle of the road. And we think that would be a great foundation to start with this.
Let's look at the past year. We've been slowly but surely working our way out of the pandemic. Some would say we're in an endemic stage. You staged championships this year with fans. How did you feel it went?
But it went great. Moms and dads were coming back in communities. I believe our crowds were better than they had been. I think electronic ticketing, so people can have an ease of buying a ticket rate at home or from their phone or computer, helped. It helped them easily get that so they don't have to go to the school and buy one and have the exchange of paper money and those type of things. So I think I would say, looking back on this school year, especially what we came out of a year ago, was a very, very satisfying year, even though there were a number of challenges.
What did you learn out of the challenges of the pandemic that you're applying now because it was a learning experience?
Number one, nothing's cast in stone.
It can change
in a heartbeat, and you better be able to adapt and adjust and restructure or whatever you think is in the best interest of those involved, because we've had to do that for 2 years, really. And this past year was a lot better than the previous. But, of course, the previous year, as you know, we had restrictions on spectators and numbers and indoor facilities and the wearing of masks. And all. It certainly was a challenge for everybody involved. But, you know, like anything else, Stephen, you've seen this better than anybody. When challenges present themselves, people that are doing things for the right reason bond together and put their eye on the target and go get it together.
No question. No question. What does it tell us about the popularity and the strength of high school athletics that when you have a bidding process for championships, that you're getting some fair competition out there to get it? What does that tell you about what the organization with the high schools have done?
It's important. Athletics are a very important piece in every local community. And in some places, it's a major identifier for that community. And because of that, there's a lot of passion and emotion with it that sometimes is really, really good. And sometimes, you know, we get off kilter a little bit. And I guess that's the reason that we've had certain policies and procedures since 1913 to take a look at those so we don't get off kilter. So when everybody does what they're supposed to do, it works. But I'll go back to one thing. Athletics are supposed to be fun. And sometimes we lose that focus for a lot of reasons. And whether it be advancement or recognition or winning and losing and the things that come with it that way. But athletics are supposed to be fun. And I think the people that we have involved with it are fun. And they keep that priority right there.
So true. I mean, that's so true. Especially at the high school level, it's supposed to be fun. Where are you right now with charter schools, non-public schools, versus public schools. Do you like how it's been working integrated the way it has been, or is it something that you need to continue to revisit?
Oh, I think it's an issue that's never going to go away, because I think there's folks out there that think people are playing loose and fast. We haven't found that. Our competition formula that we put in 4 years ago, started 6 years ago, discussion with it, has worked. Our postseason sit-out and our transfer rule has been a major assistance in having people stop the breaks of transfers just to transfer or athletically motivated transfers, and has helped, I think, level the playing field. Right now, we're taking a look at our formula to see if we should even get away from the transfer piece, because we're finding that a lot of the public schools, as well as the private schools, are having transfers. And the number of transfers at the private schools are probably less than they are at the public. So we're going to look at that competition formula based on success, because there is an outcry on some schools that keep winning, and they say they're not taking transfers. They haven't been proved they're taking transfers, but because they continue to win, people think that they're upsetting competitive balance. So we got to take a look at that.
Gone from four to six classifications. How do you feel that's worked?
Outstanding, because the people, the schools that are playing, except possibly in the highest class, are playing light-sized schools of their own. And that expansion has really equated and even the playing field from a competitive balance situation.
Yeah, we talked about name, image, likeness. That obviously is a challenge. What's another challenge you've always got to be thinking about the next thing around the block after name, image, and likeness? Is there something else maybe under the radar that you need to make sure you're ahead of the game on?
Well, I think the change, and this is a little bit down the road, Steve, but I think the way that consumers take events, whether it be television or web streaming or audio streaming and those types of things, but that landscape is quickly changing, as you've seen. And the way that people sometimes get some of our contests are changing rapidly. And I think we're down the road here, as you know, in wrestling, we have quite a relationship with Flow Wrestling that has worked very well, because every individual that's involved with wrestling has seen, you can see every bout from team through individuals, including the championships. And last year they produced something like 4.6 million minutes.
Oh.
Of time for of wrestling just in our state alone. So that says to me people are tuning in and watching. So I think that's something down the road that we have to take a good look at.
Always good to talk with the man in the arena, and that's you.
You're kind.
Nah, you know what? When you're the man in the arena, from 30,000 feet, there are a lot of people that want to, you know, oh, well. Right? And then once you're in the arena, you understand what you're dealing with. So that's why we talk with you.
Well, you're kind. But I will tell you, it is a different city here. I go to the grocery store and they have all the answers for me, but that's okay. But I'd like to look forward to seeing you and pay you an invite. You know, our spring festival is off the ground. I'd like to thank the Penn State Athletic Department, along with the Happy Valley Convention Visitors Bureau, to doing everything they possibly could to get our spring festival started next spring. And we're going to be baseball and softball 2 days back-to-back. And then we're going to follow it up with boys volleyball and boys and girls lacrosse on Saturday. So we're really excited about that, Steve. We think we got the right place with the right facilities. and we're really looking forward to it.
And I think that it's going to work out great because there could be a potential crossover for fans, and to have everything at once, it's going to be a great draw for a lot of people. Well done. I was excited when I heard about the idea. It's great.
Well, thank you. And your support, I know, was behind the scenes, but we can't thank you enough, and we'll look forward to seeing you at some of those events. And maybe even have a cold soda.
Indeed. Or maybe some other beverages. All right. So, water.
I thought, all right. Yes, of course.
Bob.
I'm a Gatorade type of guy.
Gatorade guy. Bob, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for your time and for all the hard work that you and the entire PAAA happens to do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Steve. Always good to talk to you.
Bob Lombardi, PIAA. By the way, I was talking with, you know, we had Joe Putnam on the show earlier today, and I was talking to Joe a couple of days ago. And one thing I didn't at least realize off the top, I said, when's the PIAA? It's because Medlar Field, LeBron will Park will be hosting. It's the weekend of the, or right around the 15th, right around there. Boy, that's late. That's really late. I mean, I know around here, for example, there's a lot of June 2nd, June 3rd graduations. So that's, I find that interesting that's going to be that late. A lot of fun today. And our thanks to all our guests, including Neil Coulon, Joe Putnam, for being on the show today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Great to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.